Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Around the Corner podcast, talking all things Cleveland Guardians prospects. I am your host, Brian Heminger, joined today by fellow co-host Matt Schlichting. Matt, how you doing today?
Pretty good.
Yeah, you know, nothing crazy happened in the Cleveland Guardians minor league system, you know, in the past 3 weeks. Nothing at all.
We do have a little bit of news.
Oh, we did?
Very minor. Just a couple of new players that were acquired for starting pitcher Aaron Civale. Not so noteworthy, though, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, I would say noteworthy. I mean, if you had told me after he didn't get out of the first inning of Game 5 of the playoffs last year against the Yankees that we could have traded Aaron Civale, a pitcher that has, I'm not quite sure, has ever pitched 100 innings in a season because he's always on the injured list, that we could trade him for a top 40 prospect in all of MLB, I would not have believed you.
But it was definitely a big move, and I'm going to be excited to see how these guys do in the system.
Yeah. Now, the biggest thing here is, you know, it was a one-for-one deal with Civale. Like, you know, when we traded Clevinger, we got, you know, 5-6 guys back. None of them were as highly ranked as Manzardo was, but it was just a lot of guys. And those guys have, you know, turned into major leaguers, every single one of them. Except Cantillo, who is a top 10 prospect and very close to becoming a major leaguer. So that was, you know, those were all guys that helped become a big part of our team. This time they're taking, it's one for one. I mean, Manzardo either hits or he doesn't. I kind of like it when they go for multiple guys because, you know, you never know. Like, I mean, look at the CC Sabathia trade, right? We trade CC, who was supposed to be the big dog in that trade. Do you remember?
I'm drawing a blank right now.
Matt LaPorta. Right? Like, he was this super slugger. He was going to be middle of the order guy for Cleveland for years. Never worked out. But that CC trade did work out because player to be named later, Michael Brantley. So
pretty good overall. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're taking a big risk on Manzardo, but from everything I've seen, this guy looks like a dude, like a real dude. I know that his numbers aren't amazing this year at AAA, but I mean, last year he was one of the best hitters in all of minor league baseball. Like, the guy has an incredible eye at the plate. He makes loud contact. He has a really good line drive ratio. He does not pound the ball into the dirt like, you know, Josh Bell and Ahmed Rosario. Like, this dude hits the ball hard consistently and doesn't strike out a ton and walks a lot. Like, potential, you know, if this works out, has the potential to be somebody that is batting, you know, number four or number five in our order through 2030. So that's exciting. And they don't even have to.
Yeah. Huge ceiling for a trade this, and maybe it's not a bat that helps this season, but it, if, like you said, everything pans out, that's dangerous.
And he has not been quite as good this year, but he has been dealing with a little bit of a shoulder issue, and he's had some personal stuff going on. I think his mom's sick, and that's probably been affecting him as well. But I would not be shocked to see him just return to, you know, crush mode next season after he's had a full off season to, you know, get healthy, get ready emotionally and everything. So
I like crush mode.
I am really, really excited about this guy. I know he's a first baseman, you know, that wasn't a huge area of need since Josh Naylor has kind of, you know, become a dude himself. but Naylor can play outfield. Naylor can DH. Manzardo can DH. Manzardo is actually an extremely highly rated defensive first baseman too. So he's not going to be a liability out there, which I'm excited about. So yeah, this is going to be somebody that is really, really going to help us. And he should be back to playing here pretty soon. He was on like the injured list with the shoulder thing, but I think he was already out, you know, rehabbing and everything. So,
and keeping us on the subject of trades, what can you tell us about the other player that the Guardians acquired here at the deadline? Khalil Watson.
Oh, okay. I was going to go Noah Syndergaard, but yeah, no, it was Khalil Watson. Khalil Watson was a guy that was ranked. He was drafted by the Marlins in 2021 in the first round. And at the time, there was a lot of debate on, you know, this guy could be, you know, number one overall. He was listed as the best athlete in the entire draft, just all potential. And he hasn't quite figured that out yet. I mean, granted, he was a high school player, a guy that wears his heart on his sleeve, gets emotional. He's gotten himself in some trouble in games. There was a situation he got suspended for kind of pointing his bat at an umpire and making a gun shooting motion.
Ah.
Yeah, that wasn't great, but that was not this year. It was a previous year.
I believe that you can't do that.
No, you're not allowed to do that. But this year he's been better. He's been hitting for, like, this is a guy that is super athletic. Like, think of like Will Benson. Just a smaller framed Will Benson, just insanely athletic, tons of power, but does have some swing and miss to his game, and the hit tool is the weakest. So if they can get that sorted out, if they can get use some of that contact ability that they've been ingraining into guys, but keep everything else, this guy could be nasty. Like, he made his debut in the Cleveland system today, and he already hit a home run. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Slug.
Like, an MLB Pipeline has him currently as our number 15 prospect. But I mean, and that's with him not living up to expectations so far. So if this change of scenery ends up working well for him and he figures it out, like, this guy instantly is top 10, if not top 5 prospect in the system. Like, he's that good potentially. So I'm very excited about him. And then before we get into our top 10, I did have a little bit more news. It's draft related. They had their signings for the picks, and we had 21 picks total, but two of them did not sign. I don't know if you were aware of that.
I was not, and I don't feel like it's very often that Cleveland fails to sign a guy that they draft.
Yeah, well, I mean, it used to happen all the time when you had 40 rounds. Like, you'd sign like half the guys in rounds like 20 through 40. So it wasn't like any of the top 10 picks or anything like that, but, pick number 16th round and 20th round, both high school guys that they took a shot on. They just could not get, maybe some other people signed for a little bit more than they were expecting. Maybe these guys demanded a little bit more to not, go to college. But do you remember the homeschool guy, Mac Hewer, that we were all excited about? He did not end up signing. Another one, Ryan Marrone, a left-handed pitcher out of Freedom High School, did not sign. So those were the two that didn't sign. Like, there was another high schooler that, like, basically every single year, if you looked up his, like, the Twitter of people scouting him, he added, like, 2 or 3 more miles an hour to his fastball. He grew an inch. and then, so by this past year, he looked pretty nasty, and we ended up giving him a $375,000 signing bonus as a 13th round pick, Jacob Bresnahan out of Sumner High School, left-handed pitcher. So might be a guy to keep an eye on. Everybody else signed for $150,000 or less. That was past rounds 11 through 20. I don't think there were any super big, crazy surprises. Alex Mooney was somebody that was a pretty highly rated, was their 7th round pick. And he ended up being $1 million signing bonus. And I knew it was going to go over slot. I wasn't quite sure how much. And Clemmy ended up being $900,000 over slot. The left-handed guy that already throws 100 miles an hour as a high schooler that we drafted in the 2nd round. I have not seen anything about any of our draft picks reporting to camp or anything yet. Most other teams have already had some draft picks start playing. Cleveland typically is pretty delayed in that, but I thought maybe this year they would be a little different, but they have not. So
we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for when they get into the lineup.
Will do. So anyway, let's move on to our top 10 prospect tracker and see how our Cleveland's top 10 prospects have performed over the last 3 weeks, since we did have a 3 week break between podcasts.
Yeah, overall, pretty good set of weeks. Looking at the numbers,
I'm impressed. Like, everybody looks good. Everybody but maybe one. well, maybe two, since a couple of them didn't, you know, play. But so I guess, yeah, starting out, Daniel Espino, you know, still hurt, had that shoulder surgery. He's out the rest of the season. Won't be back until, who knows, maybe even after next season starts. But hopefully fully recovered and ready to roll.
Yeah, but we're looking forward to seeing some more of both his basing and his balling.
Mm-hmm. But we did have Gavin Williams continuing doing his thing at the MLB level. How did Gavin do?
In three starts, he pitched 18 innings.
That's already great.
Already give you a pretty good idea of how things went. Struck out 9 per 9.
Nice.
Walked 7 per 9.
Not great.
But he only had a 2.5 ERA.
Hey, he stranded him.
Definitely a little bit wild, but the end result was a stretch of 3 weeks where he was able to be effective.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's impressed me is he hasn't gotten rattled by allowing pace runners, even when they're his own fault from walking guys. I knew that he wasn't going to have that same type of command that Tanner Bibee has had, but I have been impressed that he's been able to consistently work himself out of trouble after working himself into trouble. Now, that's not something that you want to consistently do, but it's at least good to know that he is capable of getting out of trouble. Like, he does not just going to completely implode when he makes mistakes.
That, I think, was the key from this stretch, was that he did not allow a home run, which certainly the earned runs tend to climb when you do give up home runs.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to walk 14 guys, if you're not, as long as you don't give up that home run, a lot of those guys will end up getting stranded. So, good news. And, Gavin is looking, I think, a little bit more and more comfortable than the every time we see him out there. So, that's always good.
It is. Number three on the countdown, we have George Valera. Brian, give us the news.
Yeah, Valera played in 12 games. And he was pretty average. Now, the batting average wasn't great, but everything else was solid. So he had a 200 batting average, but on base, 365, slugging 400, good for a WRC plus of 96. Like I said, pretty average. BABIP was low, 240, so a little bit unlucky. Walk rate was excellent, 19.2%. That's elite. Strikeout rate, not great, 26.9. Not horrible, but not great. In those 12 games, he had 52 plate appearances, 40 at-bats, 8 hits. Good news, of those 8 hits, half of them were for extra bases, so 2 homers, 2 doubles. Was hit by a pitch, walked 10 times, scored 8 runs. So, yeah, not bad at all. Not great, but basically, though, there is an opportunity at this point for him to work his way up and earn a promotion to the big leagues. Because, you know, Miles Straw is getting less playing time. They're finally, you know, starting to use him as more of a fourth outfielder. But until Valera can kind of seize that moment, they're going to keep giving opportunities to, you know, the Brennans and the Oscar Gonzalez's and even Fry and Arias in the outfield until he seizes it.
I'm hoping that because the on-base percentage has stayed pretty solid, that we see him lock back in and start driving the ball again soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I always say, having a good walk rate does make you slump-proof. And even though he wasn't, you know, he's going through a stretch where he's, you know, getting unlucky with the balls in play, he's still getting on base. He's still scoring runs. He's contributing to the team. So that's what you like to see, at least. Now, tell us a little bit about our number four prospect, Mr. Brian Rocchio.
Brian Rocchio was just promoted to the major leagues. It only accounted for one game on what would be this week's countdown, where he went 1-for-4 with a single and a run scored, playing at third. But his time at AAA, in 13 games, he slashed 302, 393, 434. a WRC plus of 112. Really nice numbers overall. He had 16 hits, four of which were doubles, one home run, walked eight times, stole two bases, walked 13% of the time, striking out less than 10% of the time, and a BABIP of around 326. So just good, honest mashing.
Mm-hmm. And with Ahmed Rosario traded and Josh Bell traded, that opens up two more spots for regular contributions for some of our young players, whether it's shortstops, first base, DH, you name it. They should be able to get regular playing time moving forward. And I think we're going to get to see a lot of Brian Rocchio throughout the rest of the season. And we're going to basically see some tryouts for who's going to be our starting shortstop next year, whether it's going to be Arias, Freeman, or Rocchio. And if they can't seize that, then we've got more coming. Angel Martinez, Jose Tena, Juan Brito, they're coming. So it's got that supply chain going, that full assembly line for shortstops.
It's a little bit crazy. And yes, we've seen that they will move them around to different positions, but I don't know that we've seen a player like that really grab hold of a spot on the diamond anywhere yet, at least in the most recent.
Not since Jimenez last year at second base.
Right. I feel like we keep saying we'll just have to wait and see. It's been like 2 years.
Yeah. Well, the first 3-4 months of this season, we were starting Rocchio there or Rosario there every day. So we weren't really getting a chance to see, and he never got hurt. So we never had a chance for somebody to step up and get regular at bats. So, you know, very inconsistent playing time for the likes of Freeman and Arias, even though they were on the team all season. So now they're getting to play every day. So we actually will get to see, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yep.
Now I have an alert surprising us at number 5 on the countdown.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah. We're basically just having Manzardo slot in for Bo Naylor's place. Bo has now officially graduated from his rookie status, is no longer on the top 30 for MLB pipeline. That's kind of how we judge it. If they're still on that list, then we can still talk about them here. Speaking of, Gavin Williams will be graduating soon too, and I have a very good replacement in mind for him as well. Manzardo, no games in the last 3 weeks to speak of, but I do want to pull up his stats from last season because they're disgusting. And I think our listeners do need to hear how good he was. So Tampa drafted him in the second round of 2021. And then last year, he began the year at high A, kind of like, you know, what we did with Chase DeLauder, you know, just start him right at high A, boom. Let's see what you can do as a college bat, right? At high A, he slashed 329, 436, 636, 63 games, hit 17 home runs in those 63 games, plus 16 doubles and a triple, walked 45 times, struck out 46. Just disgusting. And then he earned a promotion to double A, and at double A, he slashed 323, 402, 576. And walked 14 times to 19 strikeouts. So still maintained a really good walk to strikeout ratio. And he only played 30 games at AA, and they just started him this year at AAA. And yes, he has struggled a little bit this year, but I've already mentioned the personal stuff, the shoulder. Who knows how long he was playing with, you know, a banged up shoulder before they put him on the injured list.
Anthony Rizzo's been playing with concussion syndromes for like, or concussion symptoms for like 2 months.
Yeah. So, you know, if a player doesn't speak out because maybe they're afraid of losing playing time or whatever, maybe their numbers aren't going to look great, but, and we'll just have to guess why. Right. But I am looking forward to seeing how he performs in a kind of a clean slate season next year. Cause I mean, it's possible if he hits well enough, he could just make the team outright right out of spring training. We do get a bonus if Cleveland, I don't know if you saw what happened to the Mariners with Julio Rodriguez, but they kept Julio Rodriguez on their roster last year, right out of spring training, and then he won Rookie of the Year. You get a bonus first-round draft pick for doing that now. If you keep like a top 100 MLB pipeline prospect on your roster and don't manipulate a service time and he just stays on your team all season, right out of spring training, and wins Rookie of the Year, you get another first-round draft pick. That could happen for Cleveland next year. Like, Manzardo's good enough.
That's like baseball had an Easter egg all along, and the Mariners just stumbled on it.
They're the first ones to do it. Like, it was like in the new negotiations from like 2 years ago. It's just something they added to kind of promote teams not manipulating service time.
That's great.
Yeah. And I think Manzardo's good enough that he could be our starting first baseman next year.
Got a draft pick riding on it now, kid. Don't let us down.
I think they do have to be a consensus top 100 like prospect in all of MLB as well. So right now it would have to be like him or like Valera or somebody else, but and win Rookie of the Year. But I mean, if he puts up those type of numbers he did with Tampa Bay last year, I mean, he could. And even though he's had a down year this year, I mean, he's still about league average at AAA, his first taste of AAA.
I can't wait to see him play.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah, hopefully he does return soon and is healthy and, you know, finishes the year strong. Now, moving on, we've got Angel Martinez, who continues our strong trend of top 10 prospect performances.
In the last 3 weeks, Angel Martinez played 17 games. He slashed .290, .370, .565. We could stop there because it's great. But for more context, it was a WRC plus of 149.
Elite.
He had a strikeout rate of about 15% while walking 8%. Did 18 hits, 2 doubles, 5 home runs.
Yeah.
That's got hit by 3 pitches. Stole a base. It's a great line.
The 5 home runs is really what stands out over for me. Like, that is great to see that power spike. Because, you know, he's been okay all season. And to really start breaking out like that, that's great to see.
Could you imagine those numbers in a middle infield spot in Cleveland?
He had more home runs in the last 3 weeks than Ahmad's had all season. So. And that even includes Ahmad hitting one for the Dodgers already.
Yes, at number 7, Chase DeLauder.
These numbers are a little bit limited because there was a stretch there where he, I think, was attempted to be picked off, and he kind of came back to the base and kind of turned his ankle. It was not him re-injuring his foot, like a lot of people were worried about because they heard that he got limped off the field. It was the other leg than the foot that had been a history of issues. And it was not the foot. It was actually, you know, turned his ankle. So he was out for about a week, was never actually placed on the injured list. And then he returned back to action and has not missed a beat. I mean, in his time over the last 3 weeks, he played 7 games, slashed .320, .370, .480 for a WRC plus of 139, hit 4 doubles, 4 singles out of his 8 hits, walked twice, struck out 4 times, knocked in 6 runs. I mean, the dude just continues to hit and hit and hit and get on base. And I'm loving what I'm seeing. And I think it's only a matter of time until he gets promoted to AA. I was actually surprised he didn't already, because they did promote Jonathan Rodriguez from AA to AAA. And I was like, okay, well, they need an outfielder at AA. And who better than Chase DeLauder, who is overmatching all the high A pitching, but they didn't do it. But
it's another very satisfying slash line too.
Yeah.
Like .320, .370, .480.
I'm legitimately excited about Chase DeLauder. Like, when this guy's healthy, he just hits and hits and hits, and he is living up to the hype, and he's kind of having a Manzardo style season when healthy. Like, he's not walking as much, but he just, all of his contact is loud and consistent. Like, he is not just dinking and dunking the ball. So I am really liking what I'm seeing out of Chase DeLauder. Like, they threw him right in there to the fire against High A, and he is not having any issues whatsoever. So moving on, though, we've got another pitcher, Joey Cantillo. How did Mr. Cantillo do?
He had an interesting time. In 3 starts over the last couple of weeks,
All right.
Over the last 3 weeks, he had an ERA of 9.64. And that was with nine and a third innings pitched. WHIP of 1.93, a FIP of 8.64, walking almost 13% of dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Did strike out 13 guys.
That's good.
Strikeout rate of 27. Strikeouts have never been a concern with Cantillo, but
yeah.
He gave up 12 hits, 4 home runs. It was a rough time.
Yeah, not his best performance, but still, I think he'll be all right. I mean, just he's healthy. That's really what matters for me, is he's been able to pitch all season pretty much. I think this is his first time he's been able to do that for us. He's been promoted. He represented us in the Futures game, and he is still striking out batters at an elite rate. We just got to get those walks under control, and he did give up, you know, a bunch of home runs. So get, you know, just get him to hit his spots a little bit better, I would say. Improve the command. But, I mean, the velocity's there. The movement on his pitches is there. We just got to get a little bit better command. I think they can refine that. I mean, this guy could be a really good starter for us.
May I speculate wildly?
Yes, please.
Remember that time Logan Allen got promoted to AAA in the middle of the season, and he looked awful the entire time?
That was last year.
Take my tinfoil hat off. Mm-hmm. Interesting. What are they making you do, Joey?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they have a slightly different ball at AAA, so that could be affecting him. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, because Logan came back this year and looked great at AAA and then got promoted up to Cleveland, and he's been pretty good there, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, the point being, overall, it might be that he's just going through a rough stretch now, and we've mentioned this in the past, how he responds to adversity in this situation will be part of what makes him the player he becomes.
I'm still really excited to see what he can do for us in the future.
Someone who's currently exciting, number 9, is Juan Brito.
Yeah. The return in the Nolan Jones trade, Juan Brito at AA is raking and continuing to rake. Over the last 3 weeks, he played 17 games, so the most out of anybody. And slashed .339, .411, .532, cranked a couple home runs. Of his 13 hits, 2 homers, 6 doubles. Actually, 21 hits, 13 singles, 6 doubles, 2 homers. Scored 11 runs, knocked in 12 runs. Walk rate was solid, a 10.8. Strikeout rate, not terrible, 21.6. Stole 3 bases. His only issue was he got caught 4 times. So not the most fleet of foot, Juan Brito. But I at least admire that he's out there being aggressive on the base paths. And hitting and getting on base consistently. I mean, that's what you want to see out of a middle infield guy. And I'm already seeing people say, hey, you know, with the backlog of middle infielders, why not start getting some outfield reps? Because it looks like that might be an area of need.
They're going to end up playing there in Cleveland anyway. Just ask anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Gabriel Arias thought he'd be playing some outfield.
Those numbers are just great.
Yeah, they really are. Like, this has been such a promising 3-week stretch for all of these guys, where our worst guy had like an average WRC plus, and everybody else is just completely destroying. So let's keep the good times rolling with our number 10 prospect here, Welbin Francisco over in the DSL. How did he do?
He slashed .341, .471, .415. That was in 12 games played, during which he had a WRC plus of 147. His BABIP was a healthy 500.
Woo.
25% strikeout rate, 17.6% walk rate, which is great. Stole 5 bases and was caught 5 times. So really running wild.
Yeah.
If you hit like that, you can do whatever you want on the bases. Just go for it.
The coach is probably like, well, Ben, I think you know more about baseball than me. You just do whatever you want out there, man.
It's been exciting to see that the initial burst from him that we saw has been sustained. He's just hitting the ball very well.
He was named to the Dominican Summer League All-Star team as well, which is a huge shock, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, this dude was at our top international signing, and he is living up to all the hype. Like, I cannot wait to see what he continues to do as he moves through the system.
If I was really forced to criticize a great stretch of baseball, I'd go, four RBIs? Come on. Yeah.
But hey, that's on his teammates.
Yeah.
The only RBI you're ever responsible for is those home runs. If you want to, criticize him, be like, come on, blast some bombs, Welbin.
More dingers.
More dingers.
Please.
Okay. All right.
Wraps up our top 10.
Yeah. And moving on, we got our top five players of the week. And we're going to kick off the top five players of the week with at least my nomination for who is going to take Gavin Williams' place in our top 10 after he graduates very soon. And it is Jason Churio. For those not familiar, his older brother Jackson Churio is a current top 10 prospect in all of baseball for the Milwaukee Brewers. And let me double check here, because I do want to see just how good Jason has been compared to his brother this year versus his brother last year. But the reason Jackson got so much hype was he went from last year in regular single A to high A to double A in his age 18 year. And he had a 160 WRC plus at regular single A, then had a 119 WRC plus at high A, and then had a negative 28 WRC plus in just six games at double A. But he's been at double A all this season and has still been above average at 115. But Jason has been at the Complex League this year in his age 18 season, and he's got a 158 WRC plus over that entire stretch of 30 games so far. The dude is just raking. Like, his on base on the season is 497. On the season, he's currently got, I think, a 30 game on base streak in 30 games. That's pretty good.
That's solid.
He needs promoted to single A. Like, he is wasting his time right now in the Arizona Complex. Like, he is too good to play there as an 18-year-old.
These numbers are stupid.
Yeah, his brother made it to double A last year at the same age. And Cleveland, I know, isn't as aggressive with prospects as other teams are. Like, the Angels already have one of their draft picks in double A. Like, they're just stupid aggressive sometimes. This guy should be playing in full season baseball right now. He is insanely talented, insanely good. And last year, he had a 140 WRC plus in the Dominican League. So, like, it's not like he didn't perform last year, too. But he is even better this year. So, yeah, I'm just loving what I'm seeing out of him. I mean, he looks so good. In the last 3 weeks, you know, given how good his whole season has been, of course his last 3 weeks have to be good, but they were even better. he slashed 391, 517, 587, with a good for a 176 WRC+. Walked 21.7% of the time, struck out 16.7. And in those 12 games, 18 hits, 11 singles, 6 doubles, a homer, scored 16 runs, knocked in 10, walked 13 times, also stole 5 bases and did not get caught. So, yeah, this guy is just insanely good.
Those are rookie mode numbers.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his MILB stats page, which is really pretty good for minor league prospects, it turns out. I've been using it on and off here for a couple of months now, doing things for the podcast. He has an OPS of 1,000, like 1.001, which is cool. It's a cool number to see in that column. I like to look at pitches per plate appearance, which they do track in the advanced career stats. He's only seeing 2 pitches per at-bat, basically. And he has a BABIP of 465. So doing that over 150 plate appearances, and you're usually swinging at the first or second pitch, basically. He's seeing those 2 pitches really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how nuts or exemplary it is to have that pitches per plate appearance with that kind of slash line and power number, but it seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I just can't wait to see more. I want to see him in full season ball. I want to see him, you know, fight, playing, you know, against some guys that are just way older than him and just see how he does. Just throw him into that fire. This guy's ready. So, because we haven't had a ton of guys like break out this year. I mean, we had several that were at the top of our prospect list that got called up and have looked really good, like, you know, Tanner Bibee, but, and David Fry has been a huge, you know, surprise. But like in our actual minor league system, there haven't been a ton of guys that have just had insane seasons where they're, you know, they're just blowing up the prospect rankings. But Jason Chirio is, absolutely is. He's going from unknown to known very soon. But moving on, we've got another guy, a familiar name that has had an extremely good stretch.
Yeah, Jose Tena, in a stretch of 15 games, he slashed 375, 485, 518, walking 13% of the time. He struck out 25% of the time, 21 hits, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 13 runs, 6 driven in, stole 3 bags, was caught once. Also hit by 3 pitches.
Ouch.
Excellent work.
Yeah.
Get on that base.
And it's not mentioned here, and we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show, but he also just got promoted to AAA. And I think had multiple hits today at Columbus. So just continues to hit.
Our next guy on the top 5, a little bit of a blast from the past, maybe. Aaron Bracco.
Yeah, and this is his second time making the list. The last time he made the list, he didn't really have a great batting average. He just had a lot of power. He had hit a lot of home runs. This time around, he's hitting over the last 3 weeks in 15 games played. So this is, you know, not just some small, tiny stretch here. Slashing 347, 468, 510. WRC plus of 172. BABIP 421. Strikeout and walk rate both 17.7%. He knocked in 10 runs out of his 17 hits. 12 were singles, 3 doubles, a triple, a home run. Yeah, he's just seeing the ball really well. Like, this is, he's re-emerging a little bit. Like, let me check and see what his WRC plus is on the season now. In 2019, he was considered a top 10 prospect in the system. I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was around number 6. And that was because he had a 162 WRC plus at the rookie league. Chirio numbers, like in terms of how good he was compared to everybody else. And then he got bumped after the COVID season, the lost COVID season. From 2021, he went straight to high A. Like, he skipped regular single A. He went straight to Lake County. And he struggled. He had a terrible season. He slashed a 174, 269, 299. I mean, just awful. WRC plus 58. So they
That's
kept
a bad
him.
Time.
Yeah. So they kept him there. And he didn't get that much better. WRC plus 69 last year. Nice, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't just leave him at high A 3 years in a row. We're just gonna promote him and see what happens. And this year's WRC plus is 113. His walk rate is up, his strikeout rate is down after getting promoted. I don't know what is clicking for him, but I love it. He's also tied his career high in home runs. Or no, he does have a career high in home runs. I mean, it's not a lot, 9, but he's definitely going to hit double digits here this season. So yeah, I mean, everything is just starting to get a little bit better for him, which is just so good to see, because I mean, I had completely given up on the dude after back-to-back horrible seasons.
Development can be really weird sometimes.
Yeah, it's not a straight line always.
And it's definitely exciting to see him perhaps putting things together again.
Yeah. I mean, you have to start thinking that he might be back on the top 30 rankings here.
This is just an example of perhaps why it's important to be patient mm-hmm. with prospects.
Yeah. And especially with several of our pitching prospects not, you know, taking the reins this year and really making that jump. I think we're going to have a lot of position players in our top 30, and he might be one of them. So great to see with Aaron Bracco. Good for him. But speaking of pitching prospects, looks like we have had a former second rounder making a nice little appearance this week.
He goes by the name of Doug Nikhazy. In four games started in the last 3 weeks, he pitched 19 and a third innings, struck out close to nine per nine innings at 8.84, mm-hmm. had a walks per nine of 4.66. Altogether was just excellent. His ERA was 1.86, whip of 1.09, striking out 19 total. Did have the 10 walks, but those runs didn't come around to score. Mm-hmm. And so there it is.
Yeah, very Gavin Williams-esque. Line, you know, had good strikeout numbers, did give up some bases on balls. He's been one of our better pitchers in the minors for the past month or two, and he's doing it at Double A, which is good to see. I mean, he was in that same draft class with Williams and Bybee. It seems like he might be one of the next guys, next men up.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on Nikhazy and see how he continues to go. Number five on the countdown is Jervis Alfaro. Brian.
What, you don't know about Jervis Alfaro?
I don't.
He's in the Dominican Summer League. He is a 19-year-old pitching there. And he is just having a rock-solid stretch here. He also, I think, was named to the All-Star team. And if he wasn't, I mean, this three-week stretch has just been crazy. He had three starts and went 17 and a third inning. So he went over six innings per start, ERA 1.04. And on top of that, 13 strikeouts compared to just three walks. So this guy is commanding the zone really well. The whip really stood out to me too, 0.75. So not allowing a lot of base runners. I mean, you allow less than one base runner an inning, that is considered elite. And he's doing, you know, three per four innings. So, yeah, that's tremendous. Yeah, this is his first ever professional season as a 19-year-old. And I think he's pitching well enough that he's probably going to make it to Arizona next year. Because on the season, he has a 2.02 ERA. So, yeah, I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but he's commanding the zone and getting outs. So.
Given his age and how good those numbers are, he will be interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Like, you know, granted, you know, a lot of our hitting prospects that are elite at this level are 16 and 17. So a 19-year-old pitcher isn't exactly considered young in the Dominican Summer League. But, I mean, you'll still just be 20 years old next year at Arizona. So, and that's younger than anybody that was a college player and not that much older than the high school players. So, yeah, I like what I've seen. And I got a couple honorable mentions. Dian Frias, he is a middle infielder over at Lake County. High A, had a 166 WRC plus over the last 3 weeks. I almost included him. Jake Fox, also, 162 WRC plus. Milan Tolentino also has had a really nice stretch. And we had a few players earn some awards. I want to make sure I give them their proper shout-outs.
Excellent news.
Milan Tolentino was actually named the Midwest League Minor League Player of the Month for High A.
Put that thing on the shelf
for the month
right
of
away.
July. Yeah. In July, for the whole month, had a 376 batting average with three homers, seven doubles, five walks, four stolen bases, 16 runs batted in, 35 hits.
He put up some very good stretches last season, I remember, and so it's encouraging to see signs of that return. We'll see if he can sustain it.
Frias was also named Player of the Week for July 18th through July 23rd. Bracco, who we already named during this last stretch, was named Player of the Week for July 24th through July 30th, the final week of July. I think that's it. Those were our three big award winners over the past 3 weeks.
That will wrap up the top five for this week and bring us to the corner cupboard.
Let's move on in and see how our players performed, guys that are not listed in the covering the corner top 20 prospects, but we think deserve some extra recognition. So how did your position player do?
My batter is currently Daniel Schneemann. In 17 games, he slashed 200, 282, 357 with a WRC plus of 56. Not his greatest stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Stole two bags, not caught stealing, so there's that. Hit five doubles, two home runs. His BABIP for the last 3 weeks was 231. It could be said that he was a little unlucky, but a tough stretch. Mm-hmm. Definitely the worst bit of baseball that we've seen from him this season, and almost it feels like his only real down stretch so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be intriguing here past the trade deadline to see if he bounces back. It would be strange to me if he just completely abruptly fell off the cliff for the rest of the second half, given
I'm with you.
How he has continued to play throughout the rest of the year. So it happens. It's baseball.
Mm-hmm. And my boy, Joe Lampe, had a WRC plus of a 95, so about average. But during that stretch, he slashed a 236, but 344 on base with a 309 slugging. And in 16 games, he had 13 hits, 10 singles, two doubles, a triple, stole a couple bases, was hit by three pitches, walked six times, struck out 12. So not great, but not bad. So just average, which is not terrible. I just would like to see him hit for a few more extra bases out of his, make a little bit louder contact. But at least he is getting on base, which I do like to see.
How did your pitcher do for the last 3 weeks?
My pitcher, Parker Messick, pitched two games and went 15 innings pitched total. I think he might have had a piggyback game in there, unless he just had two really good long games. But his ERA was 4.2. WHIP was 1.4. He struck out 16 and walked 9. Gave up 7 earned runs in those 15 innings pitched. So not great, but not terrible. And he is officially at high A now after being promoted. So this entire stretch did take place at high A. So he is facing some tougher competition than he was earlier in the season. How about your man, Mr. Leftwich?
He pitched 9 innings total, and it seems like they're working to stretch him back out, coming back from injury.
He had a
4-inning appearance in that order, which was kind of fun to see. Soon he'll be pitching 19 innings per appearance. It won't take long at this rate. In any case, he had 8 strikeouts per 9, 23.5 strikeout rate overall, 3 walks per 9, only walking about 9%. Mm-hmm. Didn't allow a home run.
Good to hear.
Among his 8 hits, only had 3 walks. ERA of 1. Seems like he's pitching effectively now that he's back from injury.
I hope he can continue to get stretched out, because he was one of the most exciting arms in the system heading into this season, and I think that shoulder issue really messed him up, and it seems hopefully he's got that behind him, and then he can get stretched out and finish the season strong and build some momentum for next season. Moving on, we do have our injuries and transactions in the minor league system for Cleveland, and we've had quite a few interesting things. Now, this was about the period where several players were getting added to the system after signing with Cleveland, so they had to make room. So there were a few players that maybe retired, or there were a few players that got released. I think the most notable releases were Jordan Brown. He was a guy we took, I think, in 2020 draft. Yeah, he was Cleveland's 6th round pick in 2019. So it was not the 2020, but I mean, that's a pretty high pick. And he was a high schooler, a 17-year-old at the time. And it just never worked out. The dude just never hit. His highest WRC plus was actually this season, and it was 79. And he was playing at Lynchburg and just never got rolling. I mean, they gave him 47 more games this year, and his batting average was 181, 281. On base, 333 slugging. So he was given his outright release. This other one was a bit surprising. Marcos Gonzalez was released at Columbus. He was an infielder that was our top international signing, I think, the year before we drafted George Valera, or we signed that whole Valera, Rocchio, Noel all of those guys all in the same class. And Marcos Gonzalez was the year before our top international signing. He had some decent seasons overall, but just never had like that breakout moment for Cleveland. And this year he got promoted up to AAA and just could not perform. So they ended up letting him go. So, you know, sad to see. In terms of other injuries, we had Joe Naranjo, a former high school draft pick that has been playing first base in AA, was placed on the injured list with a broken hand. So he might be out the rest of the year, potentially. Christian Cairo, infielder, was placed on the 7-day injured list in Lake County. Mike Collado was placed on the injured list with a right wrist sprain in Lynchburg. Carson Tucker, Cleveland's former first-round pick, was placed on the injured list with a left wrist sprain. On the bright side, we had some activations. We had Yordis Valdez activated off the injured list in Lake County. And then we had Ryan Webb and Jake Miller, a pair of pitchers from the 2021 draft, were both assigned to the Arizona Complex League for their rehab assignments. And then in terms of promotions, we had Jonathan Rodriguez promoted to Columbus and Jose Tena promoted to Columbus. No other real crazy promotions, just those few. That'll about do it for today's show, but we do always have something fun that we like to close every show out with. So Matt, take it away.
Yeah, we have a selection of poetry from baseball's poet laureate E.E. Cummings. Left fielders overdo it with plants. So what will become of Aaron Boone? His players running around, shoulders weighed down with cheesecake. End of podcast.